Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it. Take it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hulkrin, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. A big weekend tonight. It is Bellator 186. We will talk to Ryan Bader as he defends his light heavyweight belt here in a little bit.
He's a champ.
He is a champ.
Congrats, champ.
And he'll probably still be a champ, as I don't think that Litton Vassell is going to offer him anything. But we'll talk to him in a little bit. Plus, it is UFC 217. So Joanna Jędrzejczyk will join the show as well and talk about defending her belt for a record sixth time against Rose Namajunas. And that leads us into what's happening this weekend as George St. Pierre makes his return to a weight class he's never fought in.
So is it really a return?
4 years from being essentially in retirement,
mm-hmm.
taking on the Count, Michael Bisping.
This is a really interesting matchup because, I mean, usually in this type of situation, I would look at you and go, you know what? I get it. GSP was a legend. He was amazing. He was one of the best fighters, probably during some of that prime UFC time, you know, headlining with Anderson Silva, and it was GSP and Anderson Silva going back and forth, and this would be one of those fights where I'd usually go, but dude hasn't fought in 4 years. There's no way he's going to beat a current champion. But we've got a very interesting situation here where we haven't seen a Michael Bisping active in over a year at this point. So he's fighting an older fighter who, yes, is a champion, but hasn't fought since UFC 204 against Dan Henderson, which was October of 2016. So this is a very interesting matchup because I think you would admit if we'd seen Michael Bisping fighting 3 or 4 times this past year, probably no chance for GSP. Would we agree on that?
We would agree on that. I will still tell you there is and this is what I've been saying for a week. Any like obviously lots of people because of what we do want to when you've got big things like this, McGregor, GSP, whatever. Hey, what do you think is going to happen this weekend? And I said GSP has little to no chance of winning this fight. However, if he does win, my spidey sense tells me he's going to test positive.
Oh, really?
Yes.
You're already having him piss hot.
Yes.
Interesting. Why? Is there any reason? Is it because just coming back after this long?
I think, you know, I've talked about this a lot. I just think coming out after this long, he looked huge in some of the embeddeds. And he looks a lot different than he did when he left from the Johnny Hendricks fight. And to me, I'm not necessarily casting dispersions, but I think this sport as a whole has obviously lots of people are tainted. There's a weird tainted story this week from a UFC fighter who now thinks that you're not allowed to have protein shakes because he didn't have anything different and he tested hot. So I think it's kind of the wild, wild west with that. But man, I love George. I think his fight IQ is off the charts. However, there's just something about Bisping, and I think being away for 4 years, if you look at what happened to Lyoto Machida this past weekend.
Yes, that's a great point.
He got destroyed. I mean, just destroyed. And I just think, for whatever reason, and I don't know what Michael Bisping... Maybe he's just a fighter's fighter, but for whatever reason.
Oh, he's definitely a fighter's fighter now. And he's that dude. He's very similar to Conor where, you know me, I wasn't a big Bisping fan a couple years ago. But you go out there and you keep winning and you keep fighting and you keep showing up and saving cards here and there.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun to watch a fight.
Well, and I just think he's been along for the ride for the last 4 years where you see the emergence of Demetrius Johnson, the emergence of Joanna Jędrzejczyk, the dispatching of Ronda Rousey, the fall from grace of John Jones. It's a different landscape now than it was 4 years ago.
Well, and he's a guy who, by not leaving, and again, you can call the Anderson fight a fluke. Some people still want to say that. They think Anderson won. Guys, Anderson can't declare himself winner. Michael Bisping won that fight.
A ref has to do that. That's
exactly.
Why he's
exactly. But let's keep this in mind by staying in the fight game. Yeah, he took losses against guys like Tim Kennedy and Vitor Belfort, but over the past 4 years while he's been fighting, he fought Anderson Silva. He fought CB Dolloway. Again, this isn't the top of the division, but it's current fighters in the division. Anderson Silva, obviously not top of that division at that point, and that's what I meant there before somebody freaks out.
Yeah.
Clearly
yeah.
One of the best ever.
Yeah.
Obviously, the most impressive win was him going in there and just KOing Luke Rockhold. who was the champ. He beat the middleweight champion. He's been active in the division. He defended against, yes, a very old Dan Henderson, but still active. He's been fighting. We've seen what happened to John Jones, who is arguably the best fighter to ever live on the planet. We saw what happened to him when he takes his years off every time he pops hot, and it doesn't look good. I can't see even a guy like George St. Pierre coming back from that after 4 years and being able to beat a guy who's been active in the division, regardless of the fact that he hasn't fought in over a year.
And let's talk really quickly about the year that Bisping has been off. Remember, he wins the belt seemingly on 72 hours notice after filming a movie.
You love
Vin Diesel. It's my favorite story. But what I'm saying is, it's not so much the story, but what isn't in that story. What isn't in that story is clearly Michael Bisping is always in a gym punching things, which is how he's able to come off the bench, quote unquote, and then win a title. So, yeah, has he fought in a year? No, but part of that is because the stars didn't align. Part of that is because of this weird thing that George needed extra time to be ready for this fight, which is how Bisping starts talking
exactly.
About, huh, I wonder why you needed extra time, buddy. Right? Like, so part of that 6 months is not that he couldn't do it. It's that Yoel got pushed to the side because we're going to do this GSP thing. The GSP thing got pushed deeper and deeper into 2017. That's not saying that Michael Bisping's been sitting on the beach doing nothing. He's constantly in a gym. And so,
is that another reason, too, when you talk about the big layoff and having to wait and GSP and the winks and the nods, that you think maybe GSP was cycling off of something because of how long he waited? Because here's the thing. You get older every single day in the fight business. Doesn't matter if that's incrementally by days, months, or years. So you would think a guy who's coming back would want to come back as soon as he can when he decided. And it seemed like GSP had already decided well before a November fight date that he wanted to be fighting again. So is that some suspicion there? I mean,
well, the suspicion is twofold. One, George, and this was part of the reason that he left, so I will give him credit for this. George is a perfectionist and wanted everything to be perfect. So even if, let's pretend that we don't have any suspicion, it's just George. He wanted his camp to be perfect. He wanted the fight to be perfect. He thought New York was the perfect, like, whatever the you know,
the thing is,
the
that
thing
he wanted
is
right,
that keeps him up at night, right? Like, if you read his book, he's clearly a dude that obsesses over stuff. And so even if we don't have suspicion about anything, he's a guy who's going to wait for the perfect situation because, number one, he's one of the greatest of all time. He gets to do that stuff. That's why he gets to go for a title in a division he's never fought in, right? At least in the UFC, right? He's never fought in the UFC at 85. So he gets to do that because he's George St. Pierre. However, let's go back to when he leaves after beating Johnny Hendricks. Johnny Hendricks beat him up one side, the octagon, and down the other. And you've talked about this forever, that you can still argue today in 2017, he might not have won that fight.
Yeah. It was obviously a split decision. So even the judges were arguing that day.
Yes. And I would say even though Bisping beats an older, slower Dan Henderson had that H-bomb ready the whole time and caught him a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
George is not known for catching you with the big punch.
Yeah.
Right? So to me, this is a very interesting matchup because you've got a lot of questions, which is what makes it interesting. But I just think there is something special about Michael Bisping. Will you ever think he's the greatest of all time like you would Demetrius Johnson? Likely no. But is this one of my favorite stories in the history of MMA? 100%. And if he beats George St. Pierre and has beaten Anderson Silva.
Oh my God. Does anybody have that resume?
No. No one has that resume. Right? Like, this becomes the most interesting story of a guy who sat out for 8 years on the precipice of a title shot for almost a decade, gets a call out of the blue, takes full advantage of that call, defends the belt already once against Dan Henderson, who beat him at UFC 100. Fast forward to fighting Anderson Silva. He beats Anderson Silva in the craziest circumstance of all time. And then this,
a rewind to.
Yes.
Backwards.
Yes. And then you fast forward to November of 2017. He could beat George St. Pierre. Now,
yes.
Has he had, like, the rest of his fights? We can talk about his resume and whether or not it's this, that, or the other thing. But remember that, for the most part, Bisping only loses to guys who are juiced to the gills.
And that's another thing I wanted to mention, too, is when you say you had suspicions about GSP, sometimes you got to be suspicious just because a guy's standing across the cage from Michael Bisping, because those losses have come to guys like Vitor Belfort.
Juiced.
TRT and Juice, right?
Both of them, yeah. Busted once, legal the other guy.
Chael Sonnen was TRT.
Yep.
Dan Henderson was TRT at the time.
Yep.
Vanderlei Silva, good Lord, it was Japan juice.
He was all the TRTs.
Obviously, I don't think we had any issues with the first Luke Rockhold loss.
No.
That was something that, you know, and I don't think anybody thinks Tim Kennedy was juiced.
Nope.
But a lot of those dudes that he lost to, and the thing we've talked about on the podcast before with Michael Bisping, the timing of those losses always seemed to knock him out of that championship fight that you that he waited and waited and waited for. When he took the loss to Chael Sonnen, that was essentially probably going to be a chance for him to take, oh, it says right here, UFC middleweight, that was a title eliminator. Took a loss against a guy who was on TRT and doesn't get the title shot. Works his way back up, takes a loss against Vitor Belfort. Vitor Belfort, I think, later got that title shot.
Yep.
Didn't capitalize on that, if I remember correctly. So the timing back in the early 2010s, for Michael Bisping, these guys that were clearly that were clearly on something, whether or not it was doctor exempted
only
or not.
Only one was cheating, which was Vitor the second
right.
time.
But these guys who were doing those things were beating him at the worst possible times for him to take losses, because he was right at the precipice yep. of going after that title again. So I think you make a good point there. I think another thing talking about coming off the bench and whether or not people are clean or aren't clean, you know, you can't come off the bench if you're not clean. Because you can't cycle properly if you're not clean.
Yes.
Or you can't cycle properly and come fight a week later.
In Bisping's case.
I mean, Brock Lesnar couldn't do it a month later.
No.
And trust me, that dude, if he's doing stuff, he's got the best stuff. The
Brock.
Yes, Brock. Brock, John Jones, anybody who's been pissed hot, they've got the best stuff if they're at that level. You know, the science is there.
Yep.
And they're not able to do it. So, you know, a guy like Michael Bisping, yeah, he's in the gym, he's training. Is he necessarily training for a fight? No, but he's stayed in shape and he's done what he had to do. Now, again, nobody's saying George St. Pierre isn't in shape, but George St. Pierre has never been at this weight class. George St. Pierre has never fought in 4 years. And this is going to be a very interesting dynamic, because the one area GSP's talked about and that you would probably give GSP is, well, if he can just wrestle him to the ground. We remember how pissed we got at the end of GSP's run, Lay and Pray George.
Yep.
But he did it damn well, and he did it every single fight. He seemed to have to do it. He'd get you down, and he'd just wrestle you down, and he'd stay active enough, and he'd win the fight. The interesting thing here, though, is when you jump up, this weight jump is a big one. This is 170 to 185.
It's a huge one, Ken, and before you make your point, I will remind you that in the second episode this week of Embedded, George drinks an entire bottle of water and still can't make 85.
So this is an interesting dynamic. When you fight at these weight classes, you are stepping up not only in weight, but in strength.
Yep.
And Michael Bisping has been fighting guys at 185, at 185 strength for his career.
205 as well.
Yes, and he's popped. Yeah, you're right. He's popped up a couple times. So I don't know if George St. Pierre's 170 strength after 4 years of layoff is going to be enough to even out-wrestle Michael Bisping. And I'm not discounting George's wrestling at all, because it's amazing. And he was one of the best on the planet. And for that short period, I don't think anybody could have beat him. But it's 4 years later, it's 15 pounds heavier, and it's a guy who's been dealing with strong dudes now for his entire career. You're telling me Vitor Belfort is not a strong guy? I mean, we know Vitor's the phenom, and he's done a ton of flash knockouts. He's got some of the best jiu-jitsu we saw in the early 2000s.
So does I mean, I know they didn't
UFC.
Do this in the fight, but so does Vanderlei, right? They're all black belts.
So if they could have taken him down to sub him, they would have taken him down to sub him if they had the opportunities or needed to. Again, they both beat him. But that's... that's a situation where he's been fighting pretty big dudes with pretty good wrestling for a long time. Anybody as good as George St. Pierre in wrestling? Of course not. Of course not. But when you have that and all the mitigating factors we've been talking about as we open this segment, it looks like a very tough road for GSP. But the fact is, he's a Hall of Famer, one of the best to ever do it. That's, again, what makes these things very, very interesting.
Yes, and this will be a very interesting fight on Saturday night. I still am not, I don't know about George, because I will say
Eric literally just opened up. I like the new studio setup, because like, I see what you're doing. Like, literally open it up, and he's just like shaking his head at GSP's picture, like, I don't think you're big enough, bruh.
Well, I don't think you're big enough, and you know, like you said, he was the best wrestler of all time. You don't think Michael Bisping knows that? You don't think Michael Bisping's had a year to just do that? If that's your only weapon, it's the easiest thing to beat,
mm-hmm.
right? George isn't going to knock him out.
No, and we know he can take a hit, so George is not, I don't think
there's
a chance
in hell.
George
is going to hit harder than Hendo. Let's get right. out of there with that garbage, right?
Or Luke Rockhold.
Or Rockhold, or whatever, right?
Or Anderson. Anderson floored him.
Yeah.
Just tried to declare himself the winner.
Then he got back up and won the fight,
yes,
right?
Yes, he did.
So, again, this will be a fun fight to watch because I think lots of people are excited to see GSP come back. What I will say is I would like it not to be embarrassing because I honestly would love to see George put together some other fights because I still think there's money in the Anderson fight.
You think there's money in that fight?
Why not? They both sort of, I mean, if he loses to Bisping, right, they're both sort of in the same boat. Like, they were awesome at one point.
So you just want to make sure that he doesn't look embarrassed. I think, honestly.
Well, if he gets Aldo, like, no right. one's going to want to see him.
No, you're 100% right. And I think there's actually another money fight, and this will make people upset because he'd be walking right back into another championship fight. The Woodley fight could still be a big fight. If George says, okay, you know what? I'm going back to the weight class I ruled
oh my God,
for half a decade. It'd be
nightmare.
Ugly, but
oh
you're going to buy it.
God.
You're going to buy it.
I would rather. I thought you were going to go with the McGregor fight, which I would absolutely pay for as well, because I think that would be a better fight for George. But
yeah, than the Woodley fight?
Yes.
I think they're both a massacre.
They're both better, right?
Like, right. Like only half his brain cells instead of all the brain cells are going to
yes.
be gone?
All right, so the...
But to be clear... There still are, as long as he doesn't embarrass himself, you're still paying for a Woodley fight.
Sure.
You'd pay for a Connor fight.
Yep.
You'd pay, I don't know if I'm paying for a Silva fight unless it's on a good card.
I know we don't swear a lot in this podcast, but I'm going to say bullshit on that.
Okay.
You're going to, they could headline a card with, or I mean.
Why do you do that a lot now that I'm in a different studio, like
I don't
where I could get in trouble?
So what I would
do this a lot unless I'm visiting Ken's workplace.
Well, hang on. So like, tell me that wouldn't be an amazing headline for a Fox card or wherever they end up TV-wise.
That's what I said. I don't know if I'm paying for it.
Oh, well, somebody's got, like, sponsors will pay for it. But what I'm saying is, like,
yes.
eyeballs will show up for Anderson and GSP.
Yeah, but you can't headline a UFC pay-per-view with it, I think.
I feel like this year
they've made a lot of less
intelligent
okay.
decisions.
Are you trying to make a decent pet buy rate?
I love Kevin Lee and Tony
no,
Ferguson,
I'm 100%
right?
with you.
But they'll get more than 100K in pay-per-view buys.
Yes, but I think it would be more effectively used as a co-main
totally.
Or a slight undercard on a championship fight. Or, I mean, and a Fox card is fine.
Or whatever we're doing.
Whatever,
right?
Yeah, whatever network we're on at
right.
whatever point.
Amazon Prime or wherever we end up.
So, there's definitely still, I think, interest for GSP. Just this seems like a really, I mean... It's not as terrible, I guess, as if you were going to put him in there. I think some people just dismiss Michael Bisping because of the way he won the title and the fact that, you know, he hasn't been as active. Because I don't think if you put Luke Rockhold in with GSP, you would say not a chance in hell. But Michael Bisping beat Luke Rockhold, and you're not saying not a chance in hell. Well, you are.
And I will close this part of this show out with this. No one's talking about Luke Rockhold fighting Michael Bisping anytime soon either.
Mm-hmm.
So you may say no chance, but he's not even in discussion.
Right.
So do with that as you would like to. Co-main event is Cody Garbrandt and TJ Dillashaw. Bad blood boils over. The interesting thing is the Ultimate Fighter has done neither of these guys very many favors as it's been the lowest viewed of the lowest viewed.
I was excited at first because they were choking each other and then they stopped. And
this is what everyone does, right? Like we watch two episodes of them choking each other and then we have to actually
watch the terrible fights.
The terrible fights, right? But a little bit of a reset. They used to train together. Now they hate each other. They spent the whole week yelling about which one of them is on the roids and which one of them is going to do what to each other.
And they
other.
Both said they beat each other
and
in training.
And they both put out video. Like, yes. So it's been an ugly, ugly, ugly grudge match. But technically speaking, I feel this is the hardest fight to call. While my brain says Garbrandt, it's hard to discount TJ Dillashaw, especially since they have knowledge of each other outside of the octagon.
For sure. And like you said, probably looking at the card, this is straight up the one we would expect to be the most competitive. But even being competitive, this could be a fight where Cody Garbrandt lays him out in the first round.
Sure.
And
I mean, and that's the, you know, and if you're the UFC, you're dreaming for that because Garbrandt has said, hey, oh, by the way, on this giant stage, if I lay out TJ Dillashaw, I'm going to go down and fix your DJ problem, too, because I'll go fight him next.
Oh, that's right. You were super excited about that.
Well, because I like that's a way to make this entertaining. Like the best of all time currently versus a guy who dispatched Dominic Cruz that DJ had not beaten
mm-hmm.
and dispatched TJ Dillashaw, the guy that DJ wouldn't fight.
Exactly.
It's a great story.
And you'll tell it well if it gets to that point.
Yes, I will.
Guarantee you
I will. I will tell it well.
So are you? I think I'm going with Cody as well in this one.
I just, there's something about that kid that it's just hard to pick against him.
He hasn't lost yet, so I mean, it's real hard to pick against him.
There's that, but like, you're, everyone's going to lose. So like, I don't tend to look at the undefeated, because I think that ends up being an anchor that hurts a lot of guys, right?
Right, but here's what I look at. I don't look at necessarily undefeated, but I do I do sometimes look and see how long they've been able to do it in the UFC, because those guys are no joke no matter where you are on the card. Yes, you can be low on a card, but you're in the UFC, and you see that, because we'll see guys that are undefeated, but they're only two fights into the UFC or three fights in. I mean, the guy's six fights into the UFC, five or six.
Yeah,
he's been doing it for a while now, and obviously the Dominic Cruz fight was a huge win for him. That's, you know, the championship fight. And a lot of people weren't picking him in that fight at that point.
Because Dominic's the guy that you'd never pick against, because he was like Superman. But not to finish the analogy, but I feel like I have to at this point. Like, he met his kryptonite, and now Garbrandt's the champ. And I think, I don't know that Dillashaw is much different than Dominic Cruz, other than that they've got some knowledge of one another that might be the X factor to this. But I'm going to pick Garbrandt in this.
I'm going to go that way as well. Joanna Jędrzejczyk taking on Rose Namajunas. Do we even talk about this?
No chance. Look, like, and when we talk to Joanna in a little bit, you'll hear her say this. Like, the thing about Joanna that I think makes her special is, for as good as she is, also undefeated in the UFC, going for a record sixth title defense, she changed camps because she didn't feel she was good enough. Mm-hmm. Right. And that level of self-awareness
and drive
is something not to be messed with. And I thought in her Jessica fight, she looked better, which is impossible to say. She looked better than she had recently. She was more patient. She let the things kind of unfold. And that, to me, is going to be the keys to victory against Rose, who's a little bit more unorthodox and a little bit more wild. But if you let people like that come to you, you become the counterboxer.
And this is the situation I think we saw right before we saw the fall of John Jones, where we saw not only was he dominant, obviously, before that, but we started to see a maturation as he kind of continued in his fight game. And that's when he really became super dominant, when he's able to go five rounds with a guy in a fight, and when he's able to deal with a guy like as big as Daniel Cormier and still end the fight with an elbow and those type of things. He was learning. Obviously, a slightly different way, but that's, Jan has always reminded me of John Jones as he kind of came up. And this reminds me a little bit of that, too, where now she's really pushing the fight game. And we're getting to that point where MMA has gotten where some of these fighters are doing that now, where they're right in that ripe age area. And I know I think she just turned 30.
She did.
In August.
Yep.
So she may be a little high, but still, that's a prime end. And especially for her division. Man, this could be ugly for a couple of years for any of her opponents.
Well, if she stays there, I mean, she's also talked this week about going up, because, you know, she thinks she can make a go up there. Now, I don't know. I would have to spend some time thinking about that, because, again, if we rewind the clock to when DJ fought Dominic Cruz, you and I both said, put that kid at 125 and no one beats him, and that's exactly what they did. Like, the weight classes are there for a reason, so I guess if she did that, I know they're going to put her in a title fight immediately. I would like not to, but that's just me. All that to be said, I love Rose. I just don't think Rose has the tools, because I don't think anybody has the tools to put away Joanna.
Yeah. Oh no, I don't think so. But we've been surprised before, so maybe.
And the rest of the main card, you've got Wonderboy against Masvidal. That'll be a fun fight. Hendricks is back, and Hendricks says if he can beat Costa that he's won't be beaten a year from now, because that's how great his new camp is.
I find it very interesting that we have Johnny Hendricks on the same card as GSP, and they're both now up in weight class. Any interest in that fight if Johnny Hendricks can pull off something really interesting in that opening bout?
Well, don't you think that, like, GSP would also have to do something interesting?
Yes, but he wouldn't necessarily have to win. Johnny Hendricks would obviously have to have a big win on this card for that to happen. So, but I mean, maybe there might be one more fight out there, but that'd be definitely lower on the card kind of fight. But I found it interesting when I was going down the card. Like, oh, looky here, GSP and Johnny Hendricks on the same card.
Right.
I just thought that was a, I don't know if that's serendipity or if it was planned out, and they're both up a weight class.
Yeah. Well, and Hendricks needs to be, right? Like,
didn't he just miss weight?
At this weight class, too.
Yeah. So, that's what I mean. He was 188, I think, the last fight.
Yes. So there's that.
Maybe she's figuring out the weight class.
Yes. So it's a fun main card. On the undercard, you've got a really fun fight. I'm excited about the OSP Corey Anderson fight. There's some fun stuff to watch.
You're
this
OSP
weekend.
For life.
I love
OSP. He's like your NWO life.
It doesn't matter if he wins or loses. He's just always a guy that I always like to watch fight. But it's going to be a fun fight. We're going to have everything on Twitter and Facebook by searching WOW Show. But right now, we will jump in and we'll talk to Ioana because she is amazing and I had a chance to sit down and talk to her. So, Ioana, how are you?
Hi, Eric. I'm very, very good.
I am so excited to talk to you.
Thank you.
Well, we've been huge fans since you entered the UFC, and when we get to nights like Saturday night, I always find your fights interesting because it feels to me, even before you went to American Top Team, like you were playing a different game than everyone else that you were fighting against. But can you talk a little bit about how much that game has even adapted further when you went to American Top Team? Because you looked... it's even hard to say this, right? But yeah. You looked better in that last fight than you had in the UFC, which is even crazy to think. So what can we expect on Saturday night?
I'm very happy that you saw that and you're seeing this, and I'm excited that you are happy. But, you know, I put on more work in this camp, and you can expect me in better shape than I was in my last fight with Jessica Andrade. I was focused on my training, and I've been working on my grappling and jiu-jitsu even more than before. But, of course, people don't see me fighting on the ground, but I can tell you that I'm evolving, I'm learning new things, and I feel much better and more confident on the ground than I used to feel. So I want to give her nothing, you know, in this fight. That's the thing. And even I did like almost 100 fights in Muay Thai, kickboxing and boxing, but I feel like Kattel Kubis is changing my striking game, my footwork, the power of my punches. I'm more dynamic, I throw more combos, I'm more smart, I'm more patient, and there is the other part. My takedown defense got even better with Kami Barzini, who was not part of this camp anymore, but before. But I remember what he taught me the first camp and the last camp. The camp before, like the first camp before 205, the camp before 211, and Mikey Brown, he's grappling and jiu-jitsu is just amazing, you know. So I feel like I surround with the best people in the business, and I step on better level, you know, on different level, on better level.
You're 100% on a different level, and that's what I was saying. When you go back and look at that fight against Jessica, you can see the patience, right? You're seeing the shots, you're waiting for the shots, you're not rushing, and I think all of that stuff, to me, plays very well into this fight on Saturday night, because Rose is known for being kind of, they call her unorthodox or wild or whatever that is. And I think the fact that you've developed this, or I guess leveled up your patience as far as striking goes, makes it so that you can wait for her to come to you and do what you want to do.
Of course, I can be a counter fighter, you know, even I know that I can attack like Mike Tyson, you know, and she said at the press conference on the media call, she said like her, she can throw the jab in 100 different ways, but the truth is that if you can throw one good jab and knock your opponent out, and this is what I'm going to do. So that's the thing, like the precision of my punches and other details is getting better. So I know I will be very focused in this fight, and I will very my punches are going to be very precise. And they all are smart before my fight, you know, like they always say like, oh, she hasn't fought a good wrestler, good grappler, good striker. But the truth is, I fought with Gadea, the best jiu-jitsu player in the strawweight division. I fought with Valerie Letourneau, very good striker, you know. I fought with Jessica Andrade, very good wrestler, yeah. So I think that Rose will give up when she's gonna taste my punches.
And I think that's the thing, right? Is that they all have a game plan until you sock them in the face, and you clearly punch harder than ever.
I have a game plan, and it's good to stick to the game plan. But you must take fight second by second, you know, because the opponent can show up different way than show up in the last fight, you know. So you must take the fight second by second. And I was born for that. I am a real fighter, and I am a real warrior, you know, and I know how to take the fight, you know.
I think some of the reasons that the fans love you so much, though, is not only are you a warrior and you put on these spectacular performances, but outside of the octagon, you're this super down-to-earth human who seems to love the adventure of life and going out and kind of playing a little bit. And we obviously only get glimpses of that via Instagram or the embeddeds or whatever, but what has developed that polarity in your personality that you just enjoy the zest of life so much and then can, on a dime, become this warrior that just destroys people in the octagon?
You know, I think, like you said, you know, you can see me smiling, laughing, making jokes, but when it's time to do business, I do business, and I'm 100% in. And I learned that you must surround with good people in the business, because so many people helping me before my every fight and after the fight, you know, from my coaches, my sparring partners, my teammates, my physician, my nutritionist, my agent, management company. I'm agent free right now. Trader and my cousin, because I know I can hold the business. I signed just a new contract before this fight with Dana White, and I was negotiating this contract, and I proved that I mean something to the UFC, and that I can throw a hard card on the table.
Yep.
And we play hard, and we love each other with Dana. But when there is a time to talk about business, of course, both sides must win, you know. But I'm very happy that we can sit, we can shout at each other, but at the end make a deal and still love each other, you know. Yeah, that's the thing. So I used to go through some difficulties in my fighting career. I was about to leave my job, which is being an athlete, and I didn't do that because I just changed people who I'm working with. Yeah. So, and I'm very, very happy, very lucky with people who I surround with now.
It's very important to surround yourself with great people, right? Obviously. They
are part of my success, you know. You cannot win the belt and like, okay, and now let people just, you know, and you cannot be bossy, you know. You must, because it's your business, you know. At the end, you step into the octagon, you know, and there is only you and your opponent, you know. But you must make sure that that the single person of your, in your team is putting 100% into.
Joanna Jędrzejczyk joining us, UFC 217. It is this weekend. I know you've got a million of these to do, so I want to ask one last quick question. You obviously weren't as busy this year as you have in years past. Can we expect to see you two or three times in 18, or like, what's the plan for next year?
Yeah, you know what? I used to fight every month when I was competing in MMA. I remember my UFC debut, and believe me, I'm hungry the same as I was before my UFC debut and before I won my belt. So that's why I'm staying on the top, and that's why I'm keep on defending my belt. But the thing is, I remember I had a fight May 20th. Then I had a fight month after. And 5 weeks after the second fight, I had my UFC debut. So I used to be busy. I used to fight every 3-4 months, you know. But now it's getting more and more difficult. I want to stay a champion. I don't want to lose my belt. I want to be undefeated. And that's why I prefer to fight twice a year. And it's more difficult because 14 months ago, I moved to American Top Team to Florida. I spent most of the time in Florida. But my family, my life is in Poland. So I'm very, very happy, very lucky that my family, my friends, they support me. They are with me, and they understand that I must stay in the States to keep on evolving, you know, to continue my career, my fighting career, in the octagon and outside the octagon. So next year, definitely, I'm planning to do two fights. If there is going to option to do three fights, and if I am going to feel good, I will do that. Why not? But you know, if I will win this fight in the first round, I might fight at the end of the year.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
About that.
Very cool. Joanna, I know you've got a million of these, so I'm going to let you go because I know you've got 800 of these interviews
Thank
to do.
So
but
much.
I wanted to tell you.
I will talk to you after the fight. The victory tour is on me, okay?
I would love to. Joanna, good luck this weekend. Can't wait to talk to you after the victory.
Bye. Thank you so much.
And there she goes, and we will move right into Bellator 186 as Ryan Bader is taking on Linton Vassell. Ryan joins us right now. Ryan, how are you?
Doing good. What about you?
I am doing well. Last time we talked, you were taking on Phil Davis. You walk away with the light heavyweight championship, and now you defend it against Linton Vassell. let's talk about what's been happening since June. How has it changed for you finally getting that championship? I know you and I have talked a number of times in your UFC career and now in your Bellator career, and you even said it in an Instagram post that like the pressure that was on that fight has now released and now you feel like you can have fun again. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically it. There's nothing else that really has changed. You know, it's got my feet wet in the first Bellator fight, you know, and it ended up being for a title, you know, and so I had to work through those kinks and some things in camp and whatnot, and then, you know, we got it done, ended up winning a championship, and so now, you know, it's that was one of my goals forever. Anybody that comes into this sport, it should be your goal, you know, and so I had that opportunity against a really tough opponent then and there to make that happen. And there was a lot of pressure to do that because you may never get it again, you know, and got it done. And so now that that goal is attained, you know, I want to keep rolling. But at the same time, it kind of feels like it frees me up where I can go out there and that's not always looming on my back. You know, I kind of open up, take more risks and stuff like that.
And so how has camp been for this now that you kind of loosened up a little bit and can feel like you have a little bit more fun?
Yeah, it's been great. You know, this camp has been really good. You know, last camp was like one of those things where it was kind of, I felt good, but it was like, come on, let's get through this. We need to win the title here. You know,
yep.
now it's been great. I've been feeling good. Every sparring session was good. I didn't miss one workout. I've done the extra, a good mental play. So there's really nothing else you can do. When you go into a fight like that, it's definitely one of those things where I've been in the past, I've gone in, and whether it's injuries or whatnot, I've been like, man, did I do everything I could have because I had this injury and couldn't do that? You know, it gets in your head. This one, I know walking in, it gives me confidence that I've done everything I can. Good.
That's awesome. Awesome to hear. And obviously Friday night you're taking on Linton Vassell, and he's clearly decided to go the less polished, less interesting, less well done Conor McGregor route to get this fight. Can you talk a little bit about the disrespect between the two of you and kind of where you feel that's coming from? I mean, is that how he talks himself into a title fight, or like, what do you think that, where did that come from?
Yeah, I just think he's insecure and, you know, and needs to talk. And you know, he was talking and tweeting at me when I wasn't even in Bellator, when I was a free agent, you know, and he was saying, all welcome to Bellator, and when I got the fight with Phil Davis, he's like, you know, he run ducked me, I ducked him for a title fight, you know. So I just think he's one of those guys that he's not very witty, not very smart, and just throws stuff out there, you know, and it's amusing, I guess, you know, but nobody's paying attention to him. That's the thing. He's just doing it, and his 10 fans from the UK are retweeting it, and that's about it.
Well, and you know, because it's fascinating as you go back, and you obviously know this because you lived it. Like, when you look at your career, there's really, you're not a guy who ducked anybody. I mean, you fought literally everybody who was at light heavyweight,
exactly,
who has mattered, right? So,
yeah, I'm not even worried about that at all. And that's a difference too, you know. I've been in there with the who's who of MMA. The last 8 years of my career, I've fought top 10 guys. I fought legends of the sport. You know, you look at his resume, he has some good wins, but, you know, over Liam McGarry and, you know, the one tough wrestler, really the only wrestler he fought was King Mo, and he lost. You know, he got last place in 205-pound division tournament. So, you know, he can talk all he wants, and I know he's tough. He earned his shot, and he's tough, you know, but for him to keep running his mouth like he's the greatest ever, you know, he's got to do that for his own self, but it is what it is. I'm going to look forward to it.
Ryan, I know you say in a lot of other interviews that you're not big into the shit talking, but I will tell you, in the last couple times that we've spoken, you're very good at this subtle shit talking. Like, you don't yell about it, but you're very funny at taking shots at your opponent, and I appreciate
just
that.
Just get under their skin and just kind of rav them up a little bit.
So let's talk about you, though. You've obviously had some time to kind of digest the championship. You haven't fought since June, so you've had some time to yourself. What have you been doing that hasn't been fighting related that people would be interested in?
Man, I got 3 kids under 5, you know. And,
so that's it, right?
I have another. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, I have two, so I get it. Like, that's most of your life.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we have another business. We have a little supplement business. It's a little nootropic shot called Jubi, J-U-B-I. I'm working on expanding that line. You know, we're in about 4,000 stores, convenience stores. So, you know, we it's not a sponsor. It's something that my brother-in-law, we started. So that, we buying a piece of land to build a new gym on, sort of doing a ground-up construction. So just been busy, been doing that. And then I train, whether I have a fight or not, every day. So just been training too, and starting this camp off at a higher level than last one.
Very cool. So, Ryan, what is it about? Because there's clearly a segment of the MMA population that have that entrepreneurial spirit. So, you know, what was it about why nootropics as opposed to any other supplement you guys could have done? Did you just have a great recipe? Like, what got you into nootropics as opposed to?
Yeah, we just had we were looking to do. We kind of had a good formula that we wanted to do, and so we're, instead of just talking about it, we said let's do it, and then just kind of went forward with it. And one piece started falling, you know, in front of the other, and just kept rolling, and it's been good. It's been fun. Learned a lot, and it's pretty successful. And so it's kind of rolling with that. And then, you know, we've had a gym here.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, we had a huge gym. There's 30,000 square feet. You know, when the lease ran out, we decided not to re-up on that because overhead was crazy. And so kind of going out on my own, you know, with my other partner, and I'm going to build another gym, a little smaller gym, but, you know, run it the right way and everything like that. So it's exciting. I always have to do other stuff. I can't, you know, I've been in this sport for 10 plus years, and you know, I got to do other stuff as far as keep me stimulated a different way. Because once you're immersed in something like MMA constantly, it's the last thing you want to hear about. And, you know, in your downtime, and I watch fights, but it's not like I watch every fight like sure. I used to, and, you know.
Do you feel like, because we've been talking about this on the show a little bit, like, do you feel that the sport, you know, and your former employer, like, it's almost been too much to the point that even fans feel the way